Hello, this is Lori.
Hi, Lori. Hi. James here. I don't know how I'll go.
Hi, Chair Field. This is Linda with the department, and we're ready whenever you are.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Fields, this is Michael. I'm just doing a mic check. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Mic check was successful.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Aaron.
I can hear you too, Commissioner. This is Karen, and I have in the room with me Tammy and Brittany, who is our newest employee as of Monday.
Great. Hi, Brittany. Welcome to Deed.
Hi, thank you so much.
Okay, I think we'll go ahead and get started. Sounds like you've got the department on, and it's 1 o'clock our start time, so we'll go ahead and I'll call the meeting to order at 1 o'clock, and if we can get roll call, please.
Lieutenant Colonel Hamill. Member Maynard.
Here.
Member Griffin. First Vice Chair Hamilton.
I am here in Portland, Oregon.
Member Kowalski. Member Scott.
Present.
Member Stockhausen.
Member Stockhausen will be here in a moment. She's finishing up with a couple of students in her classroom.
Thank you, sir. Second Vice Chair Van Diest.
Present.
And Chair Fields.
Here. Looks like we have a quorum, so we're good to go. And if we can go ahead and stand wherever you're at, we'll go ahead and have the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, thank you. Adoption of the agenda for December 4th, 2019. Do I have a motion?
Yes, this is Member Van Diest. I move to adopt the agenda for December 4th, 2019.
Member Hamilton, second.
Okay, thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion, roll call, please.
Member Maynard.
Yes.
First Vice Chair Hamilton.
Yes.
Member Scott.
Yes.
Member Stockhausen, have you arrived? Second Vice Chair Van Diest.
Yes.
And Chair Field.
Yes. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote at this time? Hearing no changes.
Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
Okay, thank you. Is any potentials of conflicts of interest for any board members on today's agenda? This is the time to go ahead and voice those. Any potential conflicts of interest? Okay, hearing none. We're into public comment, and I'll just go ahead and if Ms. Matson, if you know of anybody, go ahead and state their name, and we'll let them speak.
Chair Fields, we'll start with Representative Hannon.
Okay.
Is that a mic?
Representative, are you on with us?
I am. Let me just turn the phone so I'm not yelling across your staff. My name is Representative Sarah Hannon. I represent Juneau, Haines, Skagway, Gustavus, Excursion Inlet, and Klukwan in the Alaska State House. I had a career as a high school teacher here in Alaska with the good fortune of my first year of being a teacher at being at Mount Edgecombe High School, the first year the state began operations of that school. I will tell you that my history on the topic I'm going to talk to you about, though, starts a decade before that when my very first job was as a swimming instructor, which you could become before you could become a lifeguard. So my first job at age 14 was a swimming instructor for the municipality of Anchorage. I've been a Red Cross instructor for going on 45 years. And one of the things you learn in teaching swimming instruction is that it's a tangible skill that can be taught by non-professionals who are certified. And it is a skill that allows people to survive circumstances of drowning, which is one of the leading accidental causes of death of young people worldwide. Here in Alaska, it's usually one of our top five causes of accidental death of young people. Now, back to Mount Edgecombe. When the state reopened that school and the reality of the diversity of students coming from across Alaska, we talked about ways to improve life back in rural Alaska for students that we now were going to see be leaders returning to their communities, or as typically Mount Edgecombe students had been, even under its BIA tenor. And we dreamed of the time that these young leaders would have this very tangible school of being water proficient and be able to return to their communities, and maybe they would never be competitive swimmers, which was my background, but they would have a life skill that meant they were safer on a boat and they might be able to share that with their community. And that reality was long in coming and became a political football. And I would say that sometimes when the Mount Edgecombe High School pool is talked about today, it's thought about as a frivolous add-on. And I would like to remind you that for over 30 years, it should be viewed as a life skill that will change the rate of accidental death in Alaska, and something that rural Alaskans likely aren't going to have access to. The reality of building pools in every small community and school is very remote, but putting access to swimming pools and life skill instruction is vital at a regional state-run boarding school. So I would hope that you will consider in the future making sure that the Mount Edgecombe High School is available to the students there and that water safety is part of the curriculum into the future. It's very sad for me to realize as a legislator I don't really get to say spend the money, keep the pool open, but that's what I'm saying as an Alaskan. It's important to keep Alaskan children safe around coastal Alaska. And on the rivers and boats and ponds. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative. And Member Griffin's joined us. And is Member Stockhausen on yet?
Member.
Okay, not yet. Oh, Member Hamilton. Okay, thank you. Okay, anyone else on public comment?
Chair Fields, I do not have any further persons for public comment that have been recorded.
Okay, great. Thank you. We'll move into our work session then. The first item is board report to the legislature. Commissioner Johnson.
Okay. So the board is being asked to approve its annual report to the legislature. And I think Aaron is going to talk to you about this one.
Yes, thank you, Commissioner. Good afternoon, board members. This is Aaron Hardin. The following document should be fairly familiar, I believe, to most of you. This time each year, you review your annual report to the legislature that is required in state statute. At this board meeting today, you have the opportunity to review your draft and provide me with any edits you would like to see. I will then make those and re-present your final report to you in January for approval, which we will then transmit to the legislature. The purpose of the report is noted there in the background. The way I put this together is go through all past news releases to include summaries of all the action you have taken as a board over the 2019 calendar year. I then work with different teams on the floor to provide the topical reports and updates that you see in the report. You'll note that the legislature later added intent language to include the most recent NAEP results in the report. And as you are aware, NAEP was assessed this year in 2019, so those new results appear in the back of the report. Lastly, I'll note that any action that you take today as a board, I will add to the report as well, so that will be reflected when you re-review it in January. So at this time, I'm happy to walk through if there are any edits that the board would like to make by page. So at this time, Chair Fields, I'll just open it up if there are any edits any board members would like to make.
Chair Fields, this is Member Scott.
Yeah.
Okay. Through the chair to Aaron, I would just like to know if you think it would be necessary to perhaps add the four committees that we have initiated work on this summer, and maybe that would fall under part three of that code that says additional information relevant to efforts made to improve and maintain the public education system.
Through the chair, Member Scott, I think that's a wonderful idea. I would be happy to include that addition. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other additions or comments, questions for this item?
This is Member Van Deest, and thank you, Tiffany. That was a great catch. I didn't even see that about the committees. And, Aaron, you did a great job of putting this together for us, well written and very clear and easy to understand. So thank you.
Thank you, Member Vandy.
Okay, I'm not hearing any other comments. If you do come across something that you see, you can go ahead and you could email it to me or whatever, and I could talk to Aaron about it if there's something in the near future. So give yourself a week or two, and then we'd have to get it nailed down. But if that's all right, Aaron, does that work?
Chair Fields, yes, that works fine. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Item two, MEHS graduation requirements. Commissioner?
Yeah, so the recommended changes have been through an approval process with the Mount Anson High School Advisory Board and discussed at the September State Board meeting. This will be work session discussion item with a request for action during the business meeting. And I think Superintendent Banas is on, and so I'm going to turn it over to her.
Yes, this is Superintendent Vanas, and I am on, and to the chair, I'm open for any questions.
Are there any questions for
Superintendent Banas. Okay, it looks like it went through your ASB probably pretty thoroughly, I'm assuming. So, I mean, that's kind of the body that we kind of lean on for this type of stuff. Is that correct, Superintendent?
Yes, that is correct. And so just to kind of summarize very quickly, there's not a lot of changes in it, but we did have requirements that included the high school qualifying exam. So it was just an opportunity for us to make a few tweaks and to set out our requirements with a clear expectation that students will take the APS or the Alaska Performance Scholarship route. And so it's essentially the same requirements with just a few tweaks and then then communication about the Alaska Performance Scholarship.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, comments? Okay, I'm not hearing any. We're breezing right through, so thank you for being on with us. On to State Board Committee reports. So we've got the committee reports there. I don't know if Member Stockhausen, are you on yet?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Okay, so if you want to go ahead and start, we'll just go down 3A, B, C, and D. So you're up first.
I'm first. Basically, we have, I think since our last meeting, we have met once and basically just heard a report from Deb about that they have sent the link out for standards review. That had just happened, so we haven't gotten a report yet of if we're hearing or when that link is closed. And then also that the ball is rolling in the next steps for peer procurement, where it's so it's just moving slowly, but we're still kind of in the investigative process of possible state testing changes.
Okay, any questions for this committee? Not hearing any. We're on to, I don't know if Member Kowalski, have you joined us, or was she not going to be able to be with us? I can't remember. I didn't get any notice. If not, is there somebody else, Commissioner, that you'd like to speak on the Tribal Compacting Committee or another committee member?
Yes. Member Griffin or Member Scott could speak if they're willing to do that. And if they're not available, I'm not sure if Nikki Chewbacca's on or Joel Isaac, but I would suggest going with Member Griffin or Member Scott first.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Member Griffin here. On the Tribal Compact Committee, we've had a couple meetings, and that we're starting to pick up a little bit of momentum. We have some community meetings coming up here in December where we're starting to gather information from interested parties on, you know, what form the tribal compacting, what that's going to look like. And it's kind of a opening up that dialogue on what the community wants and what we want it to look like. There was, I think, since we had some reports too from a kind of ad hoc event that the of tribal compacting was conducted at somebody help me out here. Excited about the prospects anyway of what we're moving forward with tribal compacting. The ball is rolling slowly, but I can see it gaining momentum here. So.
Great. Thank you. Member Scott, do you have any to add?
This is Jamie. Member Scott. I could just add to that, too, that Joel Isaac and Nikki Chewbacca also presented on the development of a website for information related to tribal contacting and also potentially soliciting feedback with that as a tool. And we are rallying around the idea that residents of this state have an opportunity to influence the writing or creation of a tribal contacting bill, as opposed to, responding to, reacting to, making changes to once the bill is dropped in the legislation. So we're very happy with the outreach from the beginning by the department in soliciting feedback.
Well, great. It sounds like you guys got a bunch of things going. And I saw Joel sent an email out today with some of the meetings. So if any board member is interested, it looks like there's a presentation-only telemeeting coming on the December 6th, and there's a couple in December that Member Griffin mentioned. So good opportunity to stay engaged and involved with that. So thank you guys for your work on that and the momentum you guys are getting. That's great. Any other comments, questions for this committee? Okay, we'll move on to 3C regulations. Member Van Deest.
This is Member Van Deest, and the regulations committee met on November 4th, and we discussed the proposed changes from Chapter 6, Government of Schools. So Article 4 is on statewide student assessments, and the changes that were proposed were concerning required statewide assessments and the language regarding the alternative assessment for students with significant cognitive disabilities. Also proposed changes to the requirements regarding online and paper testing procedures and changes to when districts need to inform of assessment results. And then Article 5, we talked about the changes. This is in regards to school and district accountability. And the changes that were proposed were concerning deadlines for data calculations and requirements to align with the timeline of the system of school success. That's our new state accountability system. And these are necessary in determining school designations and progress toward long-term goals and the measures of interim progress. And also an amendment to include the use of previous year's graduation rate to calculate school designations, and then also revisions to the participation guidelines for inclusion of Alaska students in state assessments. And all of this is in our board packet that we all read, and Deb will probably be talking to us about this in just a few minutes. And then we talked about proposed changes from Chapter 12, which is certification of professional teachers, and repealing the regulation 12.400 and replacing it with a proposed regulation of 12.401. So if you read Tammy's report, you saw all the huge vacancies that were reported to DEED, 181 vacancies for certified teachers, 3 vacancies for administrative positions, and 26 special service vacancies. So this proposed regulation would continue to allow for emergency certification for teachers, but would also include administrators and special services teachers. So these would be people that would not otherwise be qualified, but if you read the regulation in detail, you would know that the proposal is that the person should have at least an associate's degree, be fingerprinted, and not be convicted of a crime involving a minor. So the proposed regulation also states a process that local school boards would follow, and basically they need to show their need for an emergency certificate to be granted to the person they're asking that for. And this certificate would be good for 1 year, it's not renewable, and the local school board would have to provide a mentor for that teacher. So as I think about our work on this committee, our goal was to finish with Chapter 6 and 12 before the end of 2019. We're not going to make it. We mostly did finish with Chapter 6. There is some monitoring going on with DEED on some of the regulations in Chapter 6, like the exit criteria on English learner progress and the requirements for reward schools. And we're still in the middle of Chapter 12, the teacher certification piece, and we'll continue where we left off. That's at the requirement for teachers of gifted students. And I'm also excited about the ongoing conversation that DEED is having with our stakeholders on alternative pathways to certification, and we could possibly see some proposed changes with that coming up in our committee meetings. That's my report, Chair Fields.
Great, thank you. Any questions, comments for this committee? Okay, hearing none. And I just a reminder, make sure you mute your phones so we don't get a bunch of feedback while someone's talking. Just make sure they're muted if you're not getting ready to speak. Last one is funding formula. Member Scott.
Thank you, Chair Field. Okay, so I chair the funding formula committee. Our last meeting was in September. My approach to the scheduling of our committee meetings is that we will hold meetings as movement is made on our action items from a previous meeting. And I think that this committee and the issues we are discussing evolve at a slower pace than the work of the other committees, because these are interdepartmental efforts that take a large coordinated effort to move the needle forward. But I'd like to thank the staff for their continued work on district cost factors and correspondence. So first I'll provide an overview of the progress that has been made since our last meeting, and I'd like to ask Elwin to provide us with, if needed, more detailed update of our pending work with the Department of Administration and their meeting with them in October. So as you're aware, this committee is reviewing funding related to the district cost factors and correspondence students. As far as district cost factors, the challenge is that district cost factors may not reflect current rising operational costs in all cost areas. This includes things as wages, travel, energy, goods, shipping, and that the last cost study was done in 2005, and we've determined that it's time to revisit it. So for the work of this particular item is that we'd like to consider surveying school districts on their district cost drivers, essentially what makes it expensive to live within their district, and help this inform our work. The department has approached the Department of Revenue on whether or not they would be able to build a model that could be updated by DEED to bring the cost factors more current. At this time, we're awaiting response from the Department of Revenue. And as I mentioned a little bit later, I'd like Elwin to address the department's meeting in October with the Department of Administration related to their potential engagement in building a model for DEED. So that's where we're at with district cost factors. With correspondence students, so the challenge here is that correspondence students are currently funded as 0.9. They were previously at one point funded at 0.8. But as some districts move towards a blended learning model, 0.9 may not cover the full cost of serving students if only counted as 0.9. So the work that we've done is, in September, we asked the department to provide us with three different scenarios related to where we insert correspondence as a factor. So they have come up with the three scenarios. And as it currently stands, correspondence is added after the special needs factor, which is essentially the fifth step in the formula. So we have that, and I know that Heidi pushed this matrix off to this committee, and we can send it out to the full board if that hasn't already been done. So this addresses the cost to the state, the proposed formula location of correspondence, average daily membership, and then the statute location if we were to amend. Also, we want to survey the correspondence programs about their ideas for what we call correspondence as a way of delivering education have grown and expanded over the years. So that is where we are at. And I'd like to ask Elwin if he could elaborate more perhaps on the meeting of the department with revenue.
Thank you. This is Elwin Blackwell. And yes, we have, since talking to the Department of Revenue and having not heard back from them yet as to whether or not they could take on a task and what it might cost to be able to refresh our district cost factors, it came to our attention that Department of Admin might be interested in helping us with this project also. So we reached out to the Department of Admin and had some conversations with them, because currently they do have some data available through a database that the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development currently maintains and has. I think it's a program that was kind of a product through this group called ESRI, and I don't remember what it stands for now. These conversations we had left us a little uncertain as to how detailed that information was and whether or not that level of information would meet our needs in order to be able to come up with a cost factor. We did have some conversations with the actual contractor that runs this database to find out how the data was derived and whether or not it might meet our needs. We were a little concerned that perhaps the database and the data elements that they were collecting maybe not were perhaps not at a granular enough level, a low enough level to really be able to run or develop a cost factor from it. We did send the previous work done by the ICER group in developing our last cost factors to them so that they could take a look and see whether or not they might have the data points to be able to replicate it. We have not heard back from them yet on that, though we continue to reach out to them and see perhaps whether this will work. It's possible that if we can use this as kind of a base, we may still have to look at getting some more specific data, cost data from different regions of the state in order to be able to come up with a district cost factor. The conversations I remember with them indicated that a lot of the costs that they come up with is kind of derived through a formula basis and isn't actually representative of numbers that they're getting specifically on the ground. And so that was a little concerning with us, that if we were building district cost factors from a derived number as opposed to something that represented an actual cost, say an actual cost for milk in a given community, that might not give us a realistic district cost factor. So we are still in the process of working with DOA and seeing if maybe that might be an alternative avenue if revenue can't do it, to be able to get some modeling or some way of being able to come up with refreshing these district cost factors on a more regular basis. So that kind of wraps up our conversations with DOA and this database, that with some database information the state already has available. So we're still pursuing to see whether or not it will be usable for our purposes. Are there questions from the board?
Yes, Member Griffin, did you get a chance, sir?
Yes.
Yeah, really, through the chair, the question on the cost factors, is there not anything in statute or regulation that requires us to update this periodically, 10 years, and sets the parameters for how the cost factors are calculated?
Through the chair, Member Griffin, there is, when SB 36 was first implemented, there was built into the statute a requirement that the department would go back and take a look at it every couple of years. 2 years after SB 36 was passed, the department did go back and take a look and tried to come up with some refreshed district cost factors. The conclusion was that we didn't have the resources to be able to do it, and there was no reasonable way for us to refresh them without having additional resources to be able to go out and grab a contract for it to be redone. So though it still sits on the books, we have not gone out to do that every couple of years just because we haven't had the resources or a model that we could use to plug in numbers to generate updated district cost factors. There is a statute on the books, but we have not been able to do it because we just have lacked the resources to be able to do it.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Elwin, for that update. And it would make sense at some point, if we could figure out a way with department administration or somewhere that can get to the data, to be able to have it ongoing. I would think we're not the only department or system that probably needs some of those types of cost factors. So hopefully we can figure something out that will work.
Right, member.
Any other questions?
If I can.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Just a quick comment. Of course, these cost factors, they have huge leverage in changes throughout the system. So I understand it's important to be very, very careful in the cost factors. But I think it might be time to develop some sort of cost factor formula based upon the benchmarks that we could easily recalculate. Again, not my committee, just a quick comment I wanted to make there.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I wrote that down. Okay, thank you, committee chairs, for giving us updates on the committees. We'll move on to item 4, regulations to go out for public comment. 4A, Commissioner.
All right, thank you. So the next couple of items are kind of technical items. So for 4A, the board is being asked to open a period of public comment on proposed regulation changes to Article 5, School and District Accountability, to update requirements and deadlines in Alaska's accountability system, which is the system for school success. The changes will address state and district deadlines regarding reporting and changes in the use of graduation rates. So for both of these first two items, Deb Brittle is going to address the board. And if the board needs to ask questions of your attorney, I think Luann Wyrock is available. But Deb, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Through the chair, this is Deb Brittle, the Division Operations Manager here at the Department of Education. We have worked with the committee to look at the school and district accountability regulations. This was our second year of running through the accountability system, and there we made some adjustments to reflect the practice that is more reasonable and attainable for the department. Majority of the changes were just in deadlines instead of having hard deadlines. We made them made the deadlines contingent on certain things that happen, like when we get our assessment data back. With having it makes it a little more sustainable for the long term. So in case something changes as far as data isn't available at the right time, we are not going to be non-compliant based on the regulations and statutes. So most of those regulation changes had to do with date changes. We also changed in the back in the definitions, the definition of Alaska Native at the request of Member Kowalski. It was kind of a needed change, we felt. So so if there are any questions about this section, I'm happy to entertain.
Chair Fields, I just Member Kowalski has joined us, so I just wanted to make sure you knew that.
Oh, okay, great, thank you. Any questions on this item? Okay, I'm not hearing any. We'll move on to 4B, Commissioner.
Okay. So the board is being asked to open a period of public comment on proposed regulation changes to Article 4, statewide student assessments, to update required statewide assessments and language from previous assessments, as well as to update requirements and deadlines regarding district and school reporting requirements. So before I turn it over to Deb, though, I just want to take the opportunity on the second item to address both the assessments team and the data team and Deb. As she said, it's the second year that we've implemented the accountability system. And given that the complexity of that and the quick timelines, new ESSA, and then this was our third year of giving the PEAKS assessment, and each year that has gone well. I just want the board to commend Deb, Tammy Van Wy, both of those teams for pulling that off without a lot of hiccups. And so the board may or may not have heard a lot about the accountability system in the fall, and that's largely due to some really, really hard work in the department to make sure it was published smoothly and accurately and all that. So as you dive into these technical issues and Deb's telling them, that's just a taste of the complexity, and just want the board to know what a great job those two teams did, everybody on those teams. So Deb, with that, I'll turn it back over to you.
All right, thank you. And through the chair, this is Deb Riddle again, Division Operations Manager. Article 4 are the regulations that are around the statewide student assessments, and we the changes that were made in this section were to update the required assessments, to make the language a little bit more, once again, sustainable in the long term based on the names of assessments that might be. We, instead of saying a PEAKS, we're calling it the statewide or the summative ELA and math, those types of changes. We also have included in the set of regulations the participation guidelines, which are the outlines the accommodations for the assessment. Both of these documents were updated to look at pieces that are no longer included in our practices that are no longer included in are needed in the regulations and in the participation guidelines. We did that to update to match the regulations. So we looked at for specifically in the participation guidelines for those accommodations for the students with the most significant cognitive difficulties. We looked at the design publication, as well as we had to do some name changes of assessments. For instance, Access for ELLs 2.0 is now Access for ELLs. I'm just making sure that the assessment names lined up to the regulations, and we updated pieces about NAEP and allowable accommodations just to make sure that our students with IEPs have all the accommodations and that the language is as clear and aligned to our statewide assessment regulations as they can possibly be. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Deb, and the team for all that work. Like the commissioner said, it is a lot of work and a lot of getting down in the details and making sure everything is right, and a lot of wordsmithing. So I noticed there's in some of these the section where it says you've removed a lot of the Alaska alternative assessment. Is that just to make it more open so it's not attached to a specific name, or?
That's correct.
Okay. Okay.
Have we ran into problems, or is it more just looking into the future where it may be become a problem?
It's just these regulations haven't been looked at for a very long time, and we were just cleaning them up to make sure that they were something that could maybe go a little bit longer without having to change them every time an assessment name changes, like for instance, access for ELLs. It just makes it a little bit more sustainable.
Yeah, okay. That's what I thought. Thank you. Okay, I'm not hearing any other questions or comments on this one, so thank you. And we'll move on.
Just one question.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. On the ELL term, I know we bounced around for English as a second language, ELLs, the limited English proficiency. And it seems like recently I've seen limited English proficiency as a more common term. Is that something just locally here in Anchorage, or just to keep up with what the current terms for those things mean? Different things. People with limited English proficiency aren't necessarily English language learners. I understand that, but just for the consistency of the terms from place to place.
Through the chair, this is Deb Riddle. The ELLs or EL is what is used in ESSA in the federal law, so we aligned all of our regulations to reflect the most current version of the English learner. And the assessment is for to assess proficiency on English language learners. You know, so it's LEP is a kind of outdated. ESL is more of a program. So, but for our purposes, we just aligned with the federal guidelines.
Okay. Hey, perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Item 4C, temporary certificate regulations.
Chair Fields, I'm going to ask Karen to read 4C because I must have an earlier draft of the board packet. Mine ends at 4B. So, okay. Karen?
Through the chair, this is Karen Moline, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Education. And for 4C, it is... the board is being asked to open a period of public comment to repeal the repeal of 4AAC 12.400 emergency special service certification and the adoption of 4AAC 12.401 emergency certification. The proposed change will continue to allow assurance of emergency special service certification to expand to include insurance of emergency administrative certification and teacher certification. So at this point, we'll let Tammy Van Wy talk to this particular regulation.
Chair Fields, members of the board, this is Tammy Van Wy, Division Director of Innovation and Education Excellence. And as Second Vice Chair Van Dees mentioned in her committee report, there has been a lot of conversation and work surrounding this particular regulation because of the circumstances and situations that districts find themselves in at the beginning of the school year and then throughout the school year, where emergency certification and flexibility in issuing emergency certification quickly becomes very important. And Sandra Meredith has worked extensively with the committee on this particular issue, and I believe Lou Anne Lyrock is also online. So I'd like to turn it over to Sandra Meredith, Administrator for Teacher Certification, to provide a little bit more information and to answer any questions that you have.
For the record, this is Sandra Meredith. I'm the administrator for teacher education and certification for the department. Chair Fields, would you like me to go through the regulation step by step?
If you can just hit some of the highlights, that's fine. And then if we have questions, we can jump in.
All right. So if you turn to the first page, you can see that we have expanded the emergency certificate to include administrators and teachers. Previously, prior to 2002, we did have teachers included, and that was removed at that time around the change to the federal law around emergency certification or around the reporting of emergency certificates. Since that time, we've had a number of situations from year to year where we have districts that are frantically trying to fill their rosters for educators and have come up against not having the individuals that they need that are fully certified, forcing them to hire short-term subs, which can eventually evolve into a fully licensed teacher, but sometimes that doesn't occur, and you have some sporadic programming going on as a result. This certificate would allow for some continuity for the district to resolve issues around the individuals or to fill a vacant position with someone that they felt was sufficiently qualified to provide the consistency needed until they could fill the position with a regularly certified teacher. As a part of this revised regulation, or this new regulation, it would replace 4AC12400. The district is going to be required through the board action to provide detailed information to the department about the situation requiring the certificate and explain how this would be harmful to their program and to the students in general. It would also require the district to provide the individual that's been issued the temporary emergency certificate a mentor, so there would be support for that individual. The certificate itself under C would be valid only for that year. And then in Section D on page 2, the certificated person under this new license would not be able to acquire tenure rights. D provides additional guidance to the department around minimum qualifications that the individual would have to have at least an associate degree, and of course the background clearance requirement that we apply to all certifications would apply to this certificate as well. The last piece of this proposal on page 3 removes the reference to the repeal regulation from the mandatory training language that's in our regulations at this time. That pretty much is kind of what goes through the major pieces of the proposal. Are there any questions?
Member Griffin, really quickly. Yep, this is close to 200 vacancies, I guess, in the context of, what, about 7,000 educators statewide?
Through the chair, Member Griffin, that's correct.
This is Sandy. I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
The section that you said applies to mandatory training, I'm not quite clear. Is it exempting Type C certificates or emergency certificated individuals from the training, or establishing that it's required for them?
Through the chair, Member Kowalski, the piece that's being removed, the 4AAC 12-400 is the previous requirement or the previous language for the emergency type C. It is just removing that piece from the requirements for mandatory training because we're repealing the other piece. I think your question is right now the way it, or maybe this is restating maybe the question you have is whether or not the emergency type C would be required or the new emergency certificate would be would require the mandatory training. Mm-hmm. And I think the way it, right now, the way it's written, we don't have that in there, but that would be an addition that we'd be making moving forward.
I just wanted to understand how that piece was playing. Thank you.
This is Sally. So when I hear 200 vacancies, to me that seems like a lot. But from your perspective, is that more than normal? Are we seeing a trend of that increasing over the years?
If it is, through the chair, Member Stockhausen, we are just starting to gather this information systematically, and we are still working with the data from previous years to make sure how it aligns with our latest data collection. I would say that there is probably a slight increase in comparison to last year, but we haven't completely finalized those numbers at this point.
Thank you. And as a follow-up, I appreciate that we are trying to make it possible to fill these vacancies, but what concerns me is why are there so many vacancies? Is it just so as you're gathering this data, are you also gathering reasons why so we can start to address either why teachers aren't coming here or why they're leaving and we're not able to fill these vacancies?
Through the chair, Member Stockhausen, our data collection does include some information about the circumstances of the vacancy. We still are doing an analysis of that information. But we will be sharing it with the board when it's finalized.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Member Hamilton.
Go ahead.
Thanks. So these vacancies, I'm aware that it's approximately this number each year that I've been following this. Could you tell me geographically where the majority of this is happening? Is this all, AFD? Is this all rural Alaska? I'm sure it's a mix of everything, but is there a majority out there that our biggest holes exist?
Through the chair, first Vice Chair Hamilton, we have, it's pretty much across the board in both rural and urban districts that we're seeing vacancies. I think as we look closer at the data, there's still a high number of special ed across the state that are really struggling to fill. There are some districts in the western portion of the state that have higher turnovers, which lead to increased vacancies. So there are some areas that we can identify in the data where there's specific problems based on usually on the local circumstances. Again, we need to do further analysis of the information to really find some trend information. We're only in year three of the vacancy collection.
This is Sandy again, Member Kowalski.
Yeah,
can I
go ahead?
Yep. So I've just been mulling over my question that I asked earlier. I think it's really important that we fill these vacancies so that we provide consistency to a student's experience, but I also feel like it's very important that we protect the safety and welfare of students. And so I'm wondering, do you have a sense from the school districts how much of a burden it would be to fill these vacancies and require at least some of our mandatory training to ensure the safety of our students?
Through the chair, Member Kowalski, I think that requiring the mandatory training because the four that are required are all available online, that it wouldn't necessarily be a hardship to require that of the individuals that are gaining emergency certificates. Emergency type fees that we are issuing now are able to satisfy that requirement without any issues that have been brought to my attention. If we've been doing the mandatory training requirements for 2 or 3 years now.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
This is Member Scott. I have a question.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I just want to acknowledge that I understand that some of the reasons for vacancies are built into the realities of delivering education in all reaches of the state. But my question is, and I understand that this is a discussion related to these changes being put out for public comment, but kind of thinking ahead, will we monitor over time the issuance of these certificates so that we ensure districts don't rely on this as a fail-safe yearly and that we continue to make progress on attracting and retaining certified teachers?
Through the chair, Member Scott, we will have that data. In fact, I think by actually issuing emergency certificates will actually improve our data collection, and we'll be very much more aware of those individuals that are in our schools filling this gap that is naturally occurring, I think, to some extent, no matter where you're at in Alaska. By actually having the districts applying for the emergency certificates, we'll actually have better data and can do exactly as you suggested.
Thank you.
Member Griffin, I wanted to dovetail on that too. A concern that I have that districts become dependent upon that. I was just looking through the proposed regulation, didn't see if there may be some limit on the percentage of staff per district that this would be allowed in or something along those lines, and so that it doesn't become, that we could get a district where have a high percentage of people filled with emergency certificates.
Through the chair, Member Griffin, just a couple things on that. First of all, the emergency certificates, will have to be reported annually, not only at the district, but also at school level. So it'll be available to the public and to policymakers. Actually adding in here a limit would be definitely something that could be considered. I will maybe look to Lou Anne for guidance on that.
This is Lou Anne Lyrock, through the chair, Member Griffin. As I'm looking at the draft regulations, I can see that you could add an additional proviso under D that the commissioner will not issue an emergency certificate, maybe, and then we could add in a provision there if he's a certain person. And Member Kowalski, through the chair, I'm thinking that's another, just to dovetail with what you were saying, I think that we could add another subparagraph to D, the situation about the mandatory training.
Through the chair, Sandra Meredith, again, I would just like to also just to make sure that the board would consider the fact that sometimes that emergency certificate may be issued for a school of two with only two educators, which would make the percentage 50%. So we would want to be very careful how we drafted that to not make it a limit on some of our very smallest school locations.
This is Chair Field, and I appreciate Member Griffin your comment about making sure we don't completely count on it, but all of these have to be approved by the commissioner. I think there may be enough fail safes as they go, and I'm the type of person that, you know, sometimes we don't put regulation in place that we don't need yet until it becomes an issue. So, I mean, obviously the commissioner is going to be overseeing it, and like was said, we have such a wide range of sizes in schools and districts that that potentially could become a problem. I totally get the idea, and it's definitely something to be aware of. And it may be interesting to see if what public comment comes out around that to see if that also is raised.
This is Member Van Deest. I'd like to concur with what James said. It just, I don't want to just have all bunch of little tiny things in the regulation and have it be so restrictive. So I think maybe we need to wait and see what's happening with the districts. And I would guess that the districts are not going to want to have all of their people or a majority of their people on emergency certificates unless it's absolutely necessary, because they do have to show through this regulation, they have to show that it is a definite need, and there's a bunch of different steps they have to take for it. So that's just my thoughts on the situation.
Hey, Luann, were you going to chime in there? I thought I heard your voice.
Chair Fields, this is Luann Wyrock, and I was just going to add, I think, a comment consistent with what the last two comments have been, that you have the opportunity to wait until you get some data in terms of the use of this and then sort of address the problem if it does exist.
Okay, thank you. Hey, any other comments, questions on this agenda item?
This is Member Van Deest again, and I'm going back to Sandy's original question. I'm still unclear if the people that have emergency certificates, if they're required to do the mandatory trainings or not.
Through the chair, this is Fonda Meredith again. Vice Chair Van Deest. Currently, the way it's written, no, it's not, but it would be a quick addition to the last section of the of this language that we can include in D. We can include it in either D, Luann is, thank you for being my lifeline. We can include that in D, one of the provisions. We also can add that to Section 4AAC 12. 397E to include licenses issued under this regulation.
Thank you, Sandra. I would appreciate that. As someone that's recently gone through the training, they're excellently done and they're easily accessible online, and the information is outstanding. I mean, the people that wrote these did a fantastic job. So every time I go through them, I learn a little bit of something different. So thank you.
This is Member Stockhausen. I have another question about back when under No Child Left Behind, there were reporting requirements about highly qualified and all of that. Will there be any requirements related to this under SF?
This is Sandra Meredith. Through the chair, Member Stockhausen, yes, the requirements under the federal law will continues to require us report emergency certificates. And so at this time, because we don't issue emergency certificates for teachers, we don't report any numbers. But with the issuance of certificates for teachers that are emergency, we will be. So that will be included as part of their report, each school's report card, as well as each district's report card.
Will it impact, like, rating? Will districts get a lower rating based on having X number of teachers be under the emergency certification?
Again, through the chair, Member Stockhausen, no, it will not impact the rating of a school through the accountability system. That is not included as one of our measures.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other comments, questions? Okay, thank you for answering our questions and comments and getting all that straightened out, so thank you for that. Item 5, special presentation. Commissioner?
Yes, thank you, Chair Fields. This is a report to the board regarding the Mount Edgecombe Aquatic Center and the board's privilege to have Senator Stedman join the board today and address the board directly. It's not often that the board gets an opportunity for legislators, and today you've had two, Representative Hannon at the beginning and now Senator Stedman. And as I understand it, Senator Stedman's online, so if he's there, I'm going to turn it over to him and let him address the board directly. Senator Stedman?
Yes, thank you. It's a pleasure and a privilege to be here this afternoon, although it would have been nice to, you know, have it all in person. The vast state, I guess, gets spread out. But I think you guys should have had an email from my office with a little slide presentation and some other data on the aquatic facility. Is that correct?
Yes, Senator Wright. I think that got sent out to everybody, yeah.
Okay, so let me, in brevity, I'll just kind of walk through some of the issues. I want to hit on the pool construction, the aquatic center, DOT, public facilities issues that have arisen with the maintenance of the facility, the interest by public facilities in liquidation, and then I want to talk a little bit on some land sales. So I'm going to cover a bunch of topics, and what I thought we could do is the session starts up in Juneau, have your representatives and to the Finance Committee, and we'll go through some of these things in more detail. But I want to give you a heads up, and hopefully we work out some of these issues. The pool, as I'm sure most of you are aware, was put in a bond package that was put out to a statewide vote, a little less than $150 million, $147 million statewide, of which virtually a very small fraction was for rural, and the rural component happened to be the Mount Edgecombe Aquatic Center for roughly $20 million. And there were some other appropriations after that, smaller ones to get that up. But all the other facilities were built in a fairly timely manner. Some of them came online in 2013, the last one in 16, and then the pool here, we seem to be still having some struggles. One of the main concerns I have, by just setting the 8-year delay kind of on the side as a history issue, I guess, and trying to move forward and clean things up, is the appropriations for subsidies. This particular facility is the only facility that has drawn attention in general fund subsidy, and for whatever reason. And I think the reason is physical location. It's not in the rail belt. It happens to be at Mount Edgecombe High School. And the spreadsheet that I have included has a year-by-year breakdown of the bond package projects and their general fund subsidies, of which total about $32 million, of which $500,000, of the $32 million went to Mount Edgecombe High School for that aquatic center. My concern is I see none of this in any reports or any dialogue coming from the Board of Ed. there's a fairness issue in play here, and it's glaringly obvious when you start tracking the monies and that go in. This year, we finally got to the point where we could get it open, and we had put in receipt authority. You know, receipt authority is just that. It's hollow money. If you can sell a ticket at the door, you can have some revenue, and if you can't, you don't. That was removed with the governor's prerogative of his veto. So we're working through that issue to, and he said, he's told me that we're going to get that rectified, that we could have receipt authority implemented back into that facility. The issue being to minimize the deficit draw or the deficit created by the facility itself. That facility is constructed for the main purpose of the Mount Edgecombe students. And if the board decides that they want to run that pool exclusively for the Mount Edgecombe students and deal with whatever subsidy is created, that's a policy call, and I'll support that, and I'll work with you on subsidizing the or getting the funds to subsidize that deficit. But I'd recommend that that's not the course of action, that the course of action is to run the pool for the kids first, the students, and generate revenue from whatever means of, if it's the state troopers, which has a facility, a small room there, or it's a Coast Guard, or if it's a hospital, a search facility, or other teams coming into play, whoever wants to pay the fiddler at the door to minimize that subsidy. Because I hear the cost of roughly $600,000 to operate the pool, but nobody talks about the revenue coming in the door. And I have never yet met a business person that doesn't net the revenue against the expenses, except for this facility. So we need to work through this issue and get this facility open. It is creating a lot of, or getting a lot of attention from rural lawmakers and rural entities when they look over the operations of the state and they see the treatment that this facility is getting. And I just as soon put that urban-rural issue to rest and fix it. So if I could shift gears just a little bit, I want to talk a little bit about another request I'd like to make to the board, and that is that they push back on the Department of Transportation Public Facilities and their fund extraction for the maintenance of that facility. And I think you should have some conversations with the superintendent, who's well informed on this issue and can explain the potential net impact, or not potential, it is a net impact, negative impact on the school itself. So this facility should not be in DOT's arena as it is structured to just extract revenue from, of which, again, impacts not only the deficit, but it impacts the school directly. So I'd ask the board to take a look at that, and we'll be discussing that at the finance table coming up. But you should be aware of that. The issue of selling the school by public facilities, I see that on the report. The building or the facility is not going to be sold. The legislature is not going to support liquidation of that. The city of Sitka is not going to buy that pool. And Search Hospital is not going to buy that pool. That pool belongs to the kids of Mount Edgecombe High School. So we'll take that up with the facility, and I'd like to see a positive statement coming out of the Board of Education in support of retaining that facility for those kids. And I'd like to remind you that the Yukon-Kuskokwim has the highest drowning rate of any area in the state and any area in the nation. And that school is predominantly numerically dominated by the young Alaskans from Western Alaska. So the other thing I'd like to switch gears a little bit on, and still stay on this topic, and that's potential land sales in and around the school itself. And I'm sure all the members of the board realize that the board has the authority to conduct the transactions or block the transactions, and I would encourage the board to be very defensive of any or cautious of any liquidation or leasing of land that those funds can then be appropriated away from Mount Edgecombe High School. And if, you know, those lands are leased for decades or longer or sold, we need to work, and I've had discussions with OMB, the last two OMB directors, I'm going to have a new one here pretty quick, on this subject to try to see how we can structure any lease or liquidation of land that the board authorizes, so those funds are set in like an endowment for Mount Edgecombe High School. And if we could structure some kind of a holding mechanism that the legislature can't willy-nilly appropriate out or a governor extract it, then we have also the opportunity to bring in other contributions from entities that want to support Mount Edgecombe High School. So that's kind of Mount Edgecombe High School in a nutshell. It's probably a little more direct than I'd like to deliver it. But across the telephone, and these issues are fairly large and important and quite frankly been festering for quite some time. Particularly the first one, we need to put it to rest. So, and let me jump on to the second issue, and then I'll open it for any questions, or you guys can move on with your meeting if you want. That is the Stratton Library, in conjunction with the Sheldon Jackson Museum. That's another area of authority that the Board of Education has. Those artifacts in the museum are to be left in Sitka in the agreement of the transfer of those items to the state. And the Stratton Library was purchased to facilitate a synergistic opportunity for that museum to not only take care of their artifacts, which are quite a few of them are sitting in the federal hands at the park, but to have more room and bring in more revenue. The idea is to bring in more gate receipts and get the subsidy down of Sheldon Jackson Museum. And we thought we had that fixed in last year's budget also, but we had a little hiccup at the end with that. So that'll be back on the table again this winter to finish that building off and try to come up with some kind of a structured lease or whatever we're going to do to enhance the museum and shrink the deficit of Sheldon Jackson Museum. That's another facility I think you're going to find a lot of resistance in liquidating. It makes no sense to liquidate that building and continue to jeopardize the viability of Sheldon Jackson Museum, which has about a third of the artifacts of the state museum or somewhere thereabouts. So that is another area that I think the board should hopefully take some interest in. There's a lot of community support for Sheldon Jackson Museum, and it's a unique item for marketers within the tourism industry and what have you, you know, to go out and market, because it's very unique, and the collection is better than what they have at the Smithsonian in Washington. So that's not my primary issue for the call today. The primary issue, again, was the pool and the concern that I have with the students and the employees that we have that facility up and running. And again, I'd like to draw your attention to that spreadsheet. There is an inequity between $32 million and $500,000. So when the public voted for that facility, they voted for the construction and operation of it, just like they voted for the State Library, the Learning Center at Mat-Su Campus, the community Arena and Athletic Center in Anchorage, the Life Science Building in Fairbanks, Classroom, the Student Housing in Kenai, and a couple other ones. So I think the Board of Education should ask for equal treatment. Either fund them all or don't fund any of them. And let's fund them and get this subsidy down so the superintendent doesn't have to listen to me when I come over to her campus to check on things.
Thank you, Senator. You definitely gave us a good history and lesson and information, a lot more than I had, so it definitely helps. And I'll make sure I connect with the commissioner to go over these topics for sure. You gave us several. So there are several topics there. So thank you. I don't know if any board members have any comments or anything, but we do appreciate you taking the time, and I know these teleconferences are difficult, that's for sure. It's not the same thing. So,
request some support within the budgetary process. That's helpful. I know OMB can shut you down. That's just the process. But we have our processes as the appropriators. If at all possible, I'd like to see the Board of Education be more openly supportive of burning the facility to minimize the deficit at SJ, and I think at this pool, and I think the superintendent along with her staff have some pretty good plans and concepts that could get us there, and I can get the appropriations to finish the bleachers and the other things that are needed to finish the project.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Anytime you want me to call back on the pool, just let me know. It's one of my favorite subjects, as you know.
I can tell.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. We're going to go ahead and we got a break scheduled, so we'll go ahead and just take a 10-minute break till 2:35, and we'll be back on. So just go ahead and mute your phones or whatever, and then come back on. Okay, it's 2:35, so we had our 10-minute break, and we're back in session. Commissioner, are you there?
I am here, yes.
Okay. We'll go ahead and start the business meeting. Item 6, MEHS graduation requirements. Commissioner?
Thank you. The Mount Edgecombe High School graduation requirement revision, as discussed in work session, item 2, the Mount Edgecombe High School Advisory Board reviewed and approved the changes and request the State Board of Education to approve. Changes include remove any mention of the high school qualifying exam, replace the flexible credit choice with pass the line to the elastic performance scholarship, 2 pathways for meeting course requirements, replace the specific RIM studies requirement, world history studies class. A Pacific Rim Studies class would meet this requirement, but it also allows a World History or Global Studies course. Approval of these changes will result in a revision of the graduation requirement section 4.6 of the Mount Edgecombe High School Policy Manual, which is a state board-approved manual.
Okay, thank you. Do I have a motion?
This is Member Scott.
Hey, go ahead.
I move the State Board of Education and Early Development approve the revised MEHS graduation requirements as recommended by the MEHS Advisory Board, resulting in the revision of the MEHS Policy Manual, Section 4.6.
Second, Member Van Dees.
Okay, Member Van Dees seconds. Any discussion? Okay, hearing no discussion, roll call, please.
Lieutenant Colonel Hamill. Member Maynard.
Yes.
Member Griffin.
Yes.
First Vice Chair Hamilton.
Yes.
Member Kowalski.
Yes.
Member Scott.
Yes.
Member Stockhausen.
Yes.
Second Vice Chair Van Deest.
Yes.
Chair Field.
Yes. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote at this time? Hearing no changes.
Mr. Chair, the motion has passed.
Okay, thank you. Okay, item 7A, ESSA Accountability Assessments Regulations.
The board is being asked to open a period of public comment on proposed regulation changes to Article 4, Statewide Student Assessment Regulations, which are in 4 AAC 06.700-750. And Article 5, School and District Accountability, 4 AAC 06.800-899, to update requirements and deadlines in Alaska's statewide assessments and accountability systems. In addition, open a period of public comment for the participation guidelines for inclusion of Alaska students in state assessments that are adopted by reference.
Okay, thank you. Do I have a motion?
This is Member Van Deest. I move the State Board of Education and Early Development open a period of public comment on amendments to Article 4, Statewide Student Assessment Regulation Changes, or AAC 06.700-750, Article 5, School and District Accountability Regulation Changes, or AAC 06.800-899, and the Participation Guidelines for Inclusion of Alaska Students in State Assessments that are adopted by reference.
Is that Member Scott?
Yes.
Okay, Member Scott seconds. Okay, discussion? Okay, hearing no discussion, roll call, please.
Member Maynard.
Yes.
Member Griffin.
Yes.
First Vice Chair Hamilton.
Yes.
Member Kowalski.
Yes.
Member Scott. Yes. Member Stockhausen?
Yes.
Second Vice Chair Van Diest?
Yes.
Chair Fields?
Yes. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote at this time?
Member Hamill, yes.
Oh, Member Hamill was in there. Hearing no changes?
Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
Okay, thank you. Item 7B, temporary certificate regulations.
The board is being asked to open a period of public comment on the repeal of 4AAC-12-400 emergency special services certificate, emergency type C, and the adoption of 4AAC-12.401 emergency certificate. The proposed change will continue to allow the issuance of emergency special services certificate, emergency type C, and expand to include the issuance of emergency administrative certificates, emergency type B, and teacher certificate, emergency initials. So Chair Fields, I'll turn it back over to you for the motion.
Okay, thank you. Do I have a motion?
This is Member Kowalski.
Member Kowalski, go ahead.
Okay, I move the State Board of Education and Early Development open a period of public comment on the repeal of 4AAC-12.400 Emergency Special Certificate, Emergency Type C, adoption of 4AAC-12.401 Emergency Certificate, and the amendment of 4AAC-12.397 Mandatory Training Requirements. I'd like to also include in the motion, including the addition of mandatory training under AS14.20.020K as described on the meeting record.
Second by Member Van Dees.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Discussion.
Chair Field. This is Lou Ann. And just for the record, I'll describe the language changes with respect to this motion.
Okay.
So, okay, under 4AAC-12.401D, we will delete the or after subparagraph 2 and then insert after subparagraph 3 a new subparagraph 4. So after the end of subparagraph 3, it will say, four in parentheses, who has not completed the training required by AS14.20.020K, period. And there's an additional change that we are proposing to make under 4AAC12.397E, to insert after 4AAC12.400, which is in brackets as being deleted, we will insert underlined and bolded new language 4AAC12.401. That's just to say that we are adding 401 to the list of the certificates that require the mandatory training.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion?
This is Member Stockhausen. Just to be clear, will they need to do the training before they get their certificate or within that year? And do we need to clarify that?
This is Sandra Meredith for the record. Member Stockhausen, they would have to satisfy the mandatory training requirements prior to the issue of the certificate.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Okay, hearing none, roll call, please.
Lieutenant Colonel Hamill.
Yes.
Member Maynard.
Yes.
Member Griffin.
Yes.
First Vice Chair Hamilton.
Yes.
Member Kowalski.
Yes.
Member Scott.
Yes.
Member Stockhausen.
Yes.
Second Vice Chair Van Dees.
Yes.
Fairfield.
Yes. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote at this time? Hearing no changes.
Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, now we're into standing reports and 8A, Innovation Education Excellence. We'll just go down through them, and if you have questions, comments, feel free.
This is Member Van Dees.
Go ahead, Member Van Dees. I was just going to say staff are in the room standing by if anybody has any questions about their report.
I have a couple questions for Tammy on her report. This is under special education program, and I know that there was some language about slipping. And if you could help me understand that, Tammy, my question is, what are the reasons the Alaska Special Education determination is at 70.83, and what slippage could happen, and what would be the results of that?
Through the chair, second vice chair Van Dees, this is Tamara Van Wy, division director, and to provide you with an appropriate level of detail, I'd like to turn this to Don Enoch, our program administrator for special education. He should be in the room in Juneau.
For the record, this is Deb Riddle. Don Enoch is monitoring at this point. He is not here.
Chair Fields, this is Tammy Van Wy. Is there anyone in the room in Juneau who can speak to that question?
For the record, this is Deb Riddle. No, not at this time. Don would be the best one to address that.
So, Chair Fields, this is Michael. We will note Member Van Dees' question, and we'll have, when staff get back from traveling, we'll make sure somebody calls her and then provide the summary to the rest of the board.
Okay, sounds good. Member Van Dees, did you have some other questions?
I did. This is on the CAPE accreditation for UAS. Just curious as how this review is looking, and will we be surprised?
Through the chair, this is Sondra Merritt. My observations were that the accreditation visit went very smoothly for UAS. And I don't believe there'll be any surprises.
Thank you. I'm just hoping we don't have to revisit what happened in past years with accreditation. And last comment for Tammy is, again, the conversation happening around educator quality and data and the alternative teacher preparation. I'm just excited to see how that's going to move forward as DEED continues with those conversations with our stakeholders and teachers and superintendents and different organizations. So thank you for continuing to have that happen. And I have a question for Janelle from Fairfield.
Okay.
Janelle, I'm just curious, as being a ex-high school counselor, how is your junior advisory program going? And then how are you going to assess its benefits at the end of the year? Because I'm excited you guys are doing that.
Okay. Yeah, through the chair, remember, how we're doing it is students are meeting once a week, and there's a couple of measures that we are tracking. One is simply the number of times students take an ACT or an SAT test. Our numbers had shown that most of our students were only taking it once, and what we know is the second time you take it, you typically take a bump in that, so we don't think we've been giving our students the best benefit for their college entrance exam. So that's one thing we're tracking, how many of them take it more than once. The other thing we're just tracking is how many students are taking the work keys and the ASVAB. We believe that we're going to see a few more students who may be interested in military or work keys and doing that. And then the third measure we're looking at is how many of them, if we see a bump in the Alaska Performance Scholarship, because we think this kind of early conversation is really going to help our students see the options they have through that and make a little bit more of an effort to make sure that they meet those requirements, particularly in the vocational one. So those are some of the measures we're looking at. I would like to share that as we're developing it, we have seen really some incredible stuff that isn't surprising for anybody who's worked with first-generation kids, but there's several of our lessons we've had to expand because what we realize is there's so much background knowledge of what's in-state tuition, what's out-of-state tuition, what's a subsidized loan, what's not a subsidized loan. And so we've been really, we really know now how important it is. In addition to that, we're really hitting what we know in the state of Alaska is we have the largest number of people with some college but don't finish college. So we are really exploring with kids what is it that might make a person go to college but not finish, and we're really hitting some kind of persistent skills. What do you do if you want to change your major once you're there? You know, what is it that you want to go to college for, and what is it that you want to finish for? Who's your support system if you feel like you might want to drop out? So I think long term, we'd really like to see our persistent rates go up.
Thank you, Janelle. That's great forward planning because, you know, being a high school counselor in the past, what is it, one out of three kids finish high school or finish college of the kids that start. So that's really neat that you guys are forward thinking with that. So congratulations.
Thank you.
This is Member Kowalski. I have a question.
Hey.
I am on the Alternative Certification Pathway Statistics, and first of all, thank you for providing, you and your staff for providing this information to the board. I know that we had talked about wanting to see some numbers over the past several years, and you guys did a great job of so there was just one anomaly, and I can understand what all of the certificates are except one, and that's the one that has the anomaly. What's a type I?
Through the chair, this is Saundra Meredith. Member Kowalski, the type I is the associate teacher certificate. Is utilized predominantly by Lower Kuskokwim School District, and it provides a pathway for individuals without a bachelor's degree to work as an associate teacher while they're enrolled in a program to complete both the bachelor's and the teacher preparation program.
Okay.
The anomaly that you see there, I think, is speaking to the fact that we had a large number of applicants. And those certificates are not renewed but extended as those individuals show that they have made forward progress in their program. And so the drop that you saw in the second year was that all of them already were certified.
Okay. All right. So that's probably the year they stood up the program was the school year 17-18?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Cool. Thank you. And you know, you give a moose a muffin, and we have all this information on certification and all the various pathways and the numbers of people going through that process. Just overall, though, so I can put this into scope again, roughly how many teachers are teaching in classrooms across Alaska again, like today?
Right around 8,000.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Member Hamilton.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, is Director Vanessa still on?
Yes.
Oh, great. Hey, I have twice read through your report, and I just want to do big kudos to you folks down at Mount Edgecombe. Not only do we get our best students from Mount Edgecombe at Alaska Christian College, but your NAEP scores and things that you're just excelling in thrill me for our Alaska Native young people, and I just wanted to make sure that your team there at Edgecombe hears at least from one state board member that we are thrilled about the outcomes of what you folks are doing down there, and I'd like them to hear that from me especially. So thank you.
Thank you. I will pass it on.
This is Sally.
Yep, go ahead.
Sorry. This is Sally, and I had a question for Tammy. I think at the end of October we were having you were giving us a presentation about the reading grant, and I just was wondering how many schools applied and kind of what the follow-up on that was after the end of October.
Through the chair, this is Tammy Vanelli, Division Director. Member Stockhausen, the application period closes this coming Friday, December 6th. And we just had a meeting to prepare for scoring of the grant applications this morning. And we have, Deb Riddle can give you a completely accurate number. It's around 30 applications that we're anticipating. And those do span preschool grant projects, elementary and high school. And we'll know for sure exactly how many we will actually have to review this coming Friday. Review will occur next week, and then the following week, middle of December, we plan to make the intent to awards available.
Thank you.
Hey, any other questions, comments? I mean, on any of the standing reports, any other questions or comments? Okay, I'm not hearing any, so thank you for being on and asking those questions and being available. Item 9, Commissioner's report. Commissioner?
All right, thank you. I just have a few items. First, I just want to say thank you to the board for your leadership in the Alaska Education Challenge and point out to the board that a lot of progress is being made on the implementation of the challenge. We had a great couple of years of identifying what the 5 priorities are, but over the last several months, I think the board can see that the implementation of those 5 priorities is happening. 2 that I'll mention specifically that have gotten the most attention, of course, is the first one, that every student is able to read proficiently by the end of 3rd grade. I was going to point out some things about the grant that we recently got. Thank you, Tammy, for providing an update on that. And so we continue to work on that as we also continue to work on getting a robust reading bill introduced and passed. And so legislature and governor are committing to work together on addressing that, which is the first priority of the board's Alaska Education Challenge. And the second one is tribal compacting, and you've heard some great reports about that today and the work that's going to be happening. On both of those priorities, it just so happens that today included some articles about that. Member Griffin wrote what I think is a fantastic article on the need for a reading bill. As an op-ed that was in, I know it was at least in the ADN and the Fairbanks paper. And then the ADN did a good story on tribal compacting, and I appreciate Member Kowalski and Joel Isaac and Nikki for working with the reporter on that article. And so the Alaska Education Challenge continues to get noticed, and it's providing leadership in the state. And so I just really want to thank the board for that leadership. Regarding tribal compacting, I want to announce that the website is actually live today. So if you go to the website, you'll see the homepage, the Department of Education's homepage. You'll see a small banner there that will link you to the tribal compacting website. That gives lots of information. There's a video on there that Joel did that I think is a great tool for explaining what it is and sharing a vision that tribal compacting is really about improving outcomes for all kids. I hope the board will be able to take time to go to the website and see that. Our Carl Perkins State plan for career and technical revision is underway. the CTE team at the department's been leading that, hosting meetings. And so that plan will have an opportunity for review to make sure it's in line with the board's vision and others. So be watchful and looking for more information about that state plan. And then also the Compass, our website that went live this past fall, continues to evolve and develop. One of the next big iterations of that will be adding the per pupil expenditure information on their financial data that is required by ESSA, but also some additional financial data from districts. I think that'll be a helpful tool for families and school districts and policymakers to look at when it comes to funding questions and school finance. And then finally, I just want to thank the staff of the department for all of the above, but also phone meetings are not always the smoothest meetings, but this has gone very well, and that's in large part due to Linda and Aaron and the entire staff working hard to make sure that the meeting goes well and that there's good communication setting it up and everything goes smoothly. And then just for the ongoing work, as you know, as we go into session, it'll become a really busy time for staff. And so I just appreciate that it really never slows down, and they keep at it and they keep things moving forward. So just want to say thank you to all the staff at the department. And with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Chair Fields.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, comments for the commissioner? Okay, I'm not hearing any. Thank you for your report, Commissioner. And item 10 is the consent agenda. And just wanting, that's item number 10. So we just need a motion for the consent agenda.
Member Griffin here. Okay. The State Board of Education and Early Development approved the consent agenda consisting of the approval of the minutes of the September 19th, 2019 meeting and the minutes of the October 23rd, 2019 work session and draft report to the legislation.
Second by Member Van Deest.
Okay, it's moved and seconded. Any discussion?
I remember just really quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I do intend to add, maybe bounce a little bit of a narrative off the rest of the board members of maybe a little bit more information on the NAEP data in our report, just to really clarify the urgency for a reading bill. I think it's a position that we could find a way for the board to advocate for that without being political at all.
Okay. Any other discussion? Hearing none, roll call, please. We have roll call.
Linda, are you on?
I'm so sorry, sir. I was on mute. Lieutenant Colonel
okay.
Hamill.
Yes.
Member Maynard.
Yes.
Member Griffin.
Yes.
First Vice Chair Hamilton.
Yes.
Member Kowalski.
Yes.
Member Scott.
Yes.
Member Stockhausen.
Yes.
Second Vice Chair Van Deet.
Yes.
Chair Fields.
Yes. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote at this time? All right, hearing no changes.
Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
Okay, thank you. So we have a student, we have executive session next. The student rep is volunteering at a food bank until 4 o'clock. So we are kind of stuck with a 4:15 time to have that. So I don't know the best way to handle this. So, Commissioner, should we just recess until and just call back in?
So I'm going to let Erin explain it. Just so we don't get confused. So the board, it's an executive session, so the rest of us will stay in this meeting, and I think you have a different number to call, but don't announce that number out loud because it's an executive session. But Erin, can you make sure that we're all on the same page?
Sure, Commissioner. Thank you. This is Erin Hardin. Luann and I's recommendation is that we do need to remain on the line here so that after our executive session, you can come back and announce your decision publicly on the record. I understand that most board members likely don't have two phones. So what I propose is that if you only have one phone, to disconnect from the LIO on this call, we will remain on and keep the meeting going, just on mute. You'll call into the other line that you were given by Linda to conduct your executive session privately. And you will hang up from that alternative line, and you will call back into the LIO. You will reconvene per the motion, announce your decision on the record, and then adjourn the meeting on the LIO line. That would be my recommendation. That's the cleanest way to do it.
Right. Should I go ahead and go into executive session now so I have to come back in and then go back out? Or because we have basically an hour before we can interview her.
Yes, Chairfield, that's appropriate for a board member or yourself to make the motion now to go into executive session at that time. And then we'll just stay on the line here on mute, and we will listen and wait for you when you're done to come back on the public record.
Okay. So I move the State Board of Education Early Development I've done the wrong one. Hold on, let me get to the right one. There it is. Okay. I move the State Board of Education Early Development approve. What is it doing? It did the same. It's stuck on the – oh, great. Okay, I got to go down to it. I got it now. I move the State Board of Education Early Development convene an executive session to interview candidates for student advisor elect for the remainder of the 19-20 school year. An executive session is necessary so as to not prejudice the reputation and character of any person being interviewed.
I'll second.
Okay, moved and seconded. Any objection? Hearing no objection, so we'll plan on going into executive session then. Let's plan on trying to get in there at 4:10. That'll give us 5 minutes to discuss before the candidates call in. Okay? If anybody doesn't have the number, get a hold of Erin or the commissioner, and we can make sure you have the number to call in on and the code and everything. Okay? Sound good? Okay. Let's talk to you then.
Yes, ma'am. You're not muted.
but thank you for sharing.
That's actually not us, but it's a good reminder to have everyone please mute your lines until the board resumes. Thank you.
Is the department on?
Chairfield, yes, we are.
Okay, I'm going to wait probably a minute just because I may have been, we just went off, so I want to make sure they've got time to go through the whole music and everything, make sure they get back on.
Wonderful. We'll stand by. The LAO is anticipating them calling back in.
Okay, great.
So this is the Anchorage office. We're back on.
Okay.
When you shop at Wayfair, you don't have to settle for what's in the showroom.
Okay, I suppose, Linda, you could do a roll call real quick just to see who we've got on now that we've waited.
Yes, sir, I can do that.
So thank you.
Lieutenant Colonel Hamill. Member Maynard.
Here.
Member Griffin. First Vice Chair Hamilton.
Yeah.
Member Kowalski.
Here.
Member Scott.
Present.
Member Stockhausen.
Here.
Second Vice Chair Van Dees. And Chair Field.
Here. Okay, so we're missing two, but we'll go ahead. We've got a quorum, so all right. So I'm going to go ahead and I move the State Board of Education Early Development reconvene into a regular session. Need a second.
I'll second that, Member Griffin.
Okay, it's moved and seconded. Any objection? Hearing no objection. Okay, we're back in regular session. And then can I have a motion on acceptance of the advisor-elect?
Member Maynard here. I move the State Board of Education and Early Development select Miriam Scott as its student advisor-elect for the remainder of the 2019-2020 school year. On July 1st, 2020, Ms. Scott's one-year term will begin as the student advisor to the board and continue through June 30th, 2021.
This is Member Van Dees, second.
And Member Maynard, I'm happy that you're all very aggressive on doing the motion, but we have to have a board member that actually is a vote in order to give the motion. So if Laura, you can go ahead and move what she just said and have somebody else second, that'd be great.
Yep, I move. Do you want me to repeat that, James?
No.
Can I just
no.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I move what Abigail just said.
This is Member Stockhausen, I second.
Okay, great. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none, roll call, please.
Member Maynard.
Yes.
Member Griffin.
Yes.
First Vice Chair Hamilton.
With enthusiasm, yes.
Member Kowalski.
Yes.
Member Scott.
Yes.
Member Stockhausen.
Yes.
Second Vice Chair Van Dees.
Yes.
Chairfield.
Yes. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote?
Member Hamill, yes.
Okay. And motion passes. Thank you.
Okay, now we're to board comments. If we just want to go down the same order as the vote, if you don't have anything, that's fine, no big deal. So we'll just go with Lieutenant Colonel Hamill.
I hope everybody had a happy Thanksgiving and has a Merry Christmas. I don't have anything at this time other than I will be going to the East Coast for 3 months starting in January. So I don't know when that board meeting in Juneau will be, but I may miss that.
Okay, thank you. Member Maynard?
I'm excited to be here, but I'm also sad that this will be my last year as the student representative since I am graduating next year. Other than that, I have no further comments.
Okay, thank you. Member Griffin.
Yeah, I'm excited about some of the things that are going on. I haven't got a chance to look at the Tribal Compacting website, but I'm very excited about the Compass and some of the features that it has, resources for parents and community members alike. It's good to see that in the reports graduation rates are up. I do want to continue the conversation about maybe increasing a little bit of our NAEP summaries in our report to the State Board of Education, just to kind of to reinforce the priority of improving our early childhood literacy in Alaska. Again, it's foundational to everything else that goes on. We got to get more kids that are fluent readers earlier. And then the last push, now that we have the science standards on board, which is we discussed NAEP a little bit today too, I'd like to, we have a little bit of time because the NAEP science test doesn't come up, but it's a measurement that we haven't taken in the past. That as an optional measurement that I would push for us to discuss that sometime in the future of adding the NAEP science measurement as something we volunteer for.
Okay, thank you. Member Hamilton.
Yeah, I was going to concur with Member Griffin on the third grade reading, and I have read all of his as well as other articles. I'm totally behind and backing proposals we move forward. Grateful for the grant as well. I did get word back that our meeting in January is not going to be in Juneau, although your packet says that it is. Just want to make sure everybody is confirmed that that is a true statement. We're chronically meeting.
Yes, that's true.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Last, go ahead.
No, I was going to, yes, it's true. We're going to, that'll be a telemeeting as well at this point.
Have you changed any of the other meetings that have to be in Juneau?
Not that I know of.
Okay, thank you. And then last is my term is up in March, and I looks like I will be speaking with boards and commissions about re-upping again for another 5 years. And I just want to let you all know that. And Merry Christmas to everyone.
Great, thank you. Member Kowalski.
Hi. So I wanted to let Bob know that I really appreciate the op-ed piece that was in the Newsminer this morning. It was a really great piece to read and sip in my coffee this morning, and did a great job of presenting the points and making sure the focus is on all of Alaska's children in that article. And you presented it with a lot of respect for the teaching profession, and for the, and you just stated the need to, you stated the needs very clearly. I also want to thank the department staff for being responsiveness to the request that the State Board has been asking of them over the course of the last couple of meetings. I've really appreciated seeing information presented back to us after we have questions and the follow-up that helps us inform our conversation on the State Board. And I did get a chance to look at the Tribal Compacting website, and it's just very nice. So I encourage you all to take a look at it and help share it around so that we can get that public engagement through the website portal and maybe people attending the public information sessions and public meetings coming up. Thank you.
Okay, Member Scott.
I want to extend my thanks to Representative Drummond for her public testimony today regarding the receipt authority for the MEHS Aquatic Center, and also to Senator Stedman for his presentation on the MEHS Aquatic Center and the City of Sitka Seaplane Project. I appreciate these formal opportunities to hear from legislators, especially those that hold positions within the House and Senate that directly influence education. Representative Drummond is co-chair of House Education, and Senator Stedman is co-chair of Senate Finance. And I look forward to our board interfacing with both as well as their peers over this next legislative session. In our last Manicum High School Advisory Board meeting in September, I encouraged the board to take up opportunities to advocate for policy priorities for MEHS at the legislative level in the upcoming session. Our next advisory board meeting is on December 11th, and I look forward to continuing a discussion with them. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Member Stockhausen.
Thank you, everyone, for being here today. And thank you again to the department for all that you do. And I just want to say that I'm really concerned about the number of vacancies for teachers and admin around the state. And thank you to the department for all their hard work to fill them and find ways for these pathways to happen and for gathering information about why this is happening. I really am hopeful that once we gather that information, that we can work as a board to help to address the whys so that we don't keep having this problem in the future. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Member Van Deest.
I would just like to say thank you to the DEED staff for all their hard work that happens on a daily basis, and specifically for helping our four committees that have been marshaling forward, because we do have a lot of requests for them. And I'm very glad for a DEED presence in Anchorage, because I think that provides many opportunities for school districts that come into Anchorage and districts that are on the road system to have face-to-face meetings with the DEED representatives that are there. And I appreciate Senator Stedman's presentation about the pool, the Mount Edgecombe pool and other entities there. I'm just curious, where are we on the process of selling the Mount Edgecombe land to the City of Sitka for a seaplane base? And I guess my leading question would be, is it possible to use this money from the sale and create that endowment fund that Senator Stedman was talking about? So I just wanted that to go on the record.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, there's a few questions in there that we're going to have to research and get answers on. So thank you. Thank you for everybody for being here and staying on the line to wait for our student rep meeting, and I just appreciate the work the department's doing all around, from tribal compacting to the emergency certifications to alternative type ways. There's a lot of moving parts in that department with not necessarily a lot of people, and you guys do a good job of not only maintaining it, but you know, adding websites and doing other things of the things the board's working on and things that are important in the state. I just hope that the tribal compacting conversation will also help with the safety and well-being of the students of Alaska, and with the suicide rates and other things that go on with bullying and other issues in the schools. Just hope that that whole conversation helps with that, and I think it will. I think it will help out a lot. So just thank the department for taking the lead on that and getting the website up and keep moving forward. Thank you to that committee and Isaac and Isaac and those working on it are keeping that in the forefront. That's a great conversation, and I look forward to seeing more. So with that, I move to adjourn without objection at 4:44. We are adjourned. Thank you.
Your host is exiting the conference.